And welcome to Geek Actually, episode 74 for the 6th of March, 2010. And I am so glad to be on again. I've had a really good week, actually. I've been really kind of watching movies and all sorts of stuff. So I'm really kind of jazzed for this week.
Okay. Awesome.
Yes. I know, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. All right. So this week, I'm David McVeigh. I'm your host as usual. And this week I am joined by the ever faithful... Oh, that's not the... Who's no, that? All right. Yeah, we're joined by the ever faithful Josh.
Hi, how are you,
Josh?
Hi, everyone. Philpott. I'm back.
Yes, you missed last week.
I missed you last week, even if you didn't miss me. But I'm back and I'm very excited to do some more movie talking because it's been kind of a quiet week. I didn't do the tech show and... I missed that. That was a real last-minute pull, too.
It
really was on my part. Sorry about that.
We were kind of ashamed because we were both really looking forward to this week's tech show. Yeah, but it was a good show all the same, I think.
Yeah, so. And like, I mean, it's crazy when you actually read all the show notes and you're not even on the show. But it's good to be back. It really is.
Fantastic. All right, and we are also joined in studio this week by Mr. Pablo. How are you, Pablo?
Hi, I'm good, man.
That's good.
I'm excited to be on the show.
Now, for those who've never met Pablo, Pablo is an actor, a writer, a photographer, an aspiring filmmaker.
It's good.
It's good. So now, just to explain as well, because people who regularly listen to the show are probably going, what's happening here? Because we, for the last 3 months or so, we've had the fixed three people in the studio. Well, we kind of made a decision that we needed to get back to what we were doing, which was having rotating guests through the studio and so forth. And so for the last couple of weeks, we've been doing it. Last week, we had Katrina. This week, we've got Pablo. And next week, the amazing, effervescent superstar that is Miran Lee will be back in the studio.
Right on.
Everybody brace for impact.
Will definitely be wearing some sort of a life jacket.
And we also have a very special guest next week, but we're not going to announce that just yet because we're not sure whether or not she's going to be live in
Famous
the studio.
Famous people are always hard to, you know, sort
always
of
hard to
down.
Pin down. She's either going to be live in the studio, so you might want to come in live, or she's going to come in the afternoon and do a pre-record for the following show, but we will have a very special guest coming on in the studio next Saturday. So it's going to be very, very exciting for us. All right, we should get on with this show because we're kind of jam-packed. We got kind of a lot of information to get through. If you're only listening to the audio podcast and this is the first time you've ever joined one of these shows and you hear us talking about chat rooms and who's that on camera and so forth, that's because we do go out live on Saturday at 12 p.m. and you can come and catch
ish.
All the fun. Ish. We're always here at 12. Whether we actually start on type is another story. But we go out at geekactually.com/live as Australian Eastern Time. And do come along and join the fun. It's kind of fun. All right. Now, on this week, Oscars are almost upon us. So Josh and I kind of felt that we've been dancing around this for weeks and avoiding certain films. And we thought it's time to bite the bullet and get serious about this.
Yeah.
And so I've now seen 8 of the 10 films, and I will have, by the end of this weekend, I'll have seen all 10 films. I am really working on getting the ability to see all 10 films. But 2 of the films that we hadn't seen up to this point were Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Longest fucking name ever.
Longest film title in history. And The Blind Side, the film that kind of took everybody off guard when Sandra Bullock won the Golden Globe. I'm going to play a clip for you guys real quick. This is actually Sandra Bullock winning the Golden Globe. The reason why I'm playing this clip is it was such a surprise, considering the competition she was up against. And this is Sandra Bullock, after all. It's her last two films have been The Proposal and the Steve film, whatever that thing was.
All About Steve.
All About Steve, thank you. And so when her name was actually read out in the Best Dramatic Actress category, everybody was kind of, huh? What I want you to note on this clip, it's very short, is just Mickey Rourke's reaction. Mickey Rourke's reading out the nominations. His reaction when he reads the winner.
Okay.
So just watch Mickey Rourke's face when he reads the winner.
Sure.
Emily Blunt, The Young Victoria. Sandra Bullock, The Blind Side.
Robert Downey Jr. liked that one.
Mirren, he did. He seems excited about it.
Carey Mulligan, An Education.
She's a black horse. Keep your eye on that girl.
Okay.
The boy, should it be based on a novel pushed by Sapphire.
She is awesome.
Here it comes.
And the Golden Globe goes to... Sandra Bullock, Blind Side.
Wow, he seems surprised.
It's almost like, what?
It's almost like a Marissa Tomei moment. Like,
it is, yes, very much. Now, the Golden Globes, I mean, at the Oscars, it's not, let's face it, the best actress category, best supporting actress category has always been either going to a veteran filmmaker, a veteran film actress who's been around for a billion years, Maggie Smiths and your Judy Dench's, or it goes to some newcomer that nobody's ever heard of before. It's that spread, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And so... Even though Marissa Tomei won, it wasn't really a surprise. We kind of went, okay, that's what they do.
Well, she got it for being awesome, and you know.
Yeah, but the Golden Globes are a little bit more safe than that generally, and I think there wasn't a person in that room that expected Sandra Bullock to win that award.
I just don't think any of the people in that room had actually seen the film. I think that's what it was. Everybody's just like, what the fuck is Blindside?
I'm going to go ahead and take a leap here and say Robert Downey Jr. expected her to win that award.
Well, he was very...
That's what I'm saying.
Like, did you see the look? It's like, yeah.
And what's actually funny is that Ricky Gervais, who hosted the Golden Globes... He does. He's good. Ricky Gervais, who actually hosted the Golden Globes, actually made an off-color joke at the beginning of it, basically saying anybody could buy a Golden Globe, right? And when Sandra Bullock got up, I don't have the rest of that clip because I wanted to keep it short, but when she gets up, the first thing she says is, boy, I hope Ricky Gervais was just kidding when he said, you know. And so even she, I think, was a bit taken back by it. Now, then she went on to get nominated for an Oscar. And so this was the real surprise, was it wasn't just this one strange little flash in the pan. She got nominated, and so did the film, which made us go, all right, we got to take this seriously. We got to actually have a look at this and see what the story is, because they're putting, let's face it, they're putting Blindside up against The Hurt Locker. They're putting it up against Up in the Air, A Serious Man, Avatar, Inglourious Basterds. I mean, you know, they're putting it up against some serious competition. Yeah. And is it really, and what we'll talk about in the review coming up, is it really worthy of all of that accolade, and more importantly, because I don't think the film has a chance in hell of winning, but even if it was a great film, it's up against too much competition, quite frankly.
Okay, no, go on.
But the question is, bless you.
I did that off.
The question is, will she be a contender for the Oscar for Best Actress? And we'll come back to that when we get to our film review. Josh says no. All right, let's delve our toes into a little bit of film news to see what is happening in the world. And all I've got to say first off the bat is I never saw this coming.
Never?
Never. Not
really,
a chance. I was just taken aback completely when Guillermo del Toro basically said, you know what? New Line Cinemas has been talking to us, and they're actually interested in doing the Hobbit films in 3D. Really? I would never have seen that coming.
Because it's just so out of character. I mean, no other film at the moment is doing that.
No, of course not.
I won't lie to you, there's absolutely nothing that 3D won't improve.
We have a story that is coming just to that.
You're going to love this.
You're going to love the last story of the day. Then.
Because, I mean, you know, to quote
Guillermo del Toro, director of Hellboy, etc., he says, I wouldn't read much on it just yet. But now, after all this time, after Avatar doing the box office it did, we have had inquiries from above about The Hobbit being in 3D. No impositions or heavy leaning, just inquiries, just fulfilling my promise to let you all know if discussions ever started. The point is that 2 months ago, he came out and said, we're not doing these in 3D.
Yeah.
We have never been in discussions. We're not going to do this. Now, we've heard this story before.
Mm.
Can you remember, Josh, where we heard this before? Just recently. Film's opening on April 1st.
I'm just trying to think.
Which is so—that's so poetic.
What?
April 1st opening. I just love it.
No, go, Dave. You've got
Clash of the Titans.
Oh, well, yeah.
6 months ago,
yeah.
Louis Leterrier said we are not doing Clash of the Titans in 3D. Period.
Was the original in 3D?
No.
Seriously, dude, right?
No, no, I mean like, you know, red and blue.
No, 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 no. The original was not in 3D in any way, shape, or form. Hello, car alarm.
Seriously, Dave, though, like, if you're going to throw one of those at me again, just, like, write it on a piece of paper or something, because it's morning and...
No, I just want to know if you remembered, because it was a story from a while ago where basically Louis Leterrier made this big... fanfare about how he was not going to do a 3D film and Clash of Titans wasn't being shot in 3D. And then literally 2 or 3 months later, turned around and said, yeah, we're doing the upscale conversion and we're pushing back the release date because it's going to be in 3D before you know it, you know? And it's like, really? Never say never in this world, you know? Never say never. If you want to find out more about 3D, by the way, just for a bit of self-promotion, our last tech show was all about 3D. Go look for Geek Actually Tech, and we did a whole thing on how 3D works and the history of 3D, and also it was very interesting.
It was very, very interesting.
I thought it was really good, actually. I felt like I was in teacher mode again. It was very good. All right, Roger Ebert. We all know who Roger Ebert is in this room.
He's awesome. Know and love Roger Ebert.
But for our listening audience, there are the younger people out there who don't know.
Want to hear
oh, hello.
The voice.
That's not what we wanted to clip. That's what we wanted to show. Okay.
There we go.
Roger Ebert is arguably one of the most
famous. That's like an old photo.
Yes, this is from his heyday, and this is he's arguably one of the most famous movie critics of our time. He's reviewed films in the Chicago Sun-Times since 1967, and for 23 years was the host of several movie review shows, including At the Movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, Sneak Previews, and Siskel and Ebert at the Movies. In 1975, Roger Ebert was the first film critic to win a Pulitzer Prize for criticism, and in 2005 he was awarded a Hollywood Walk of Fame star, the first, and I don't even know, he may even be the only critic who has ever done this. I couldn't vouch for that last part, but he was the first. Unlike many critics, Ebert also briefly worked in the movie industry, teaming up with skinflick director Russ Meyer in 1970. Ebert co-wrote with Meyer Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, followed by Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens and Up. All considered cult classics today.
Absolutely.
Ebert has often been criticized for being too soft on films, but I do share his ratings on movies. He says you must always rate a movie for what it set out to achieve and compare it to like films. To quote the man himself, he says, when you ask a friend if Hellboy is any good, you're not asking if it's any good compared to Mystic River. You're asking if it's any good compared to The Punisher. And my answer would be, on a scale of 1 to 4, if Superman is 4, then Hellboy is 3. And The Punisher is 2. In the same way, if American Beauty gets 4 stars, then The United States of Leland clocks in at about 2. So he always compares films to like films.
Sorry, can I just chime in there?
Sure.
Now, which Punisher movie are we talking?
He doesn't specify, but I'm going to assume in that era. Talking about Mystic River and Hellboy, I'm going to say
Lundgren, Tom Jane.
I think it's Tom Jane.
That's good.
I'm thinking Tom Jane at this point. Okay, Roger Ebert was struck, for those who don't know, by thyroid cancer in 2002, and due to complications in surgery, he has lost the ability to eat, drink, and talk. He uses a feeding tube for eating, and he uses a computer to communicate. However, he still has never missed a premiere, and he writes reviews consistently.
He is one of my idols when it comes to just like any sort of reviewing, and because ever since I've first had any interest or passion in the idea of reviews for things, I found it to be one of the least biased people. He can go to a horror film, he can go to whatever, and he will rate them fairly. There is no snootiness to the man.
A man who just truly loves cinema.
Exactly. And
see, for me, it's very much the fact that he wrote Up. That's pretty much all we're
talking about the Pixar film here.
No, we are not. We are most certainly not.
Definitely make sure you do not mix those two up. This is not a film to take your kids to.
They were both playing at the same time in Sydney, because there was the Russ Meyer Festival and Up was at the cinema.
Didn't one of the people that responded to your Facebook thing?
Yeah, because I said let's go do an Up marathon. They're like, oh, I don't want to see a kids film. Like, I don't, you know.
I don't think that's really going to be a problem.
Piranha in the bathtub.
I'd like to point out, just for the record, Atomic Betty is in the house. Hello, Atomic Betty in our chat room.
That was supposed to be that one, not. I just kind of pulled the fingers at her.
It was supposed to be that one.
Don't do that.
All right, continuing on here, we basically say that, why are we talking about Roger Ebert at this point? Because he continues to write film reviews, and even during treatment, he was going to premieres, and he's been using a computer to communicate. Recently, he's been working with a company called Seraproc. Now, Sarah Brock, which is developing computer speech based on real person's voice. Now, what they do is if you are finding out that, this is kind of heading into tech territory, but if you're finding out that you're going to undergo throat cancer or surgery or anything like that, what you can do is go to these people in advance and basically record millions and millions of words, basically to have a have a library of your voice. Right. They can then build that into a speech synthesis program so that when you actually do a text-to-speech, it actually sounds like you talking back. It's still in beta. It's not perfect. But they actually went to Roger Ebert and said, we'd like to run a test using you. Because he's got 23 years on television and radio and everything else, that they had a huge library of him talking already. And this came up on Oprah. Now, Oprah, that esteemed source of news, no, but I do. I will give them quality in the sense that they do look for these wonderful, heart-wrenching stories. And I just came across this video and thought, this is just really, really touching, because this is Roger Ebert using his voice synthesizer, his new voice synthesizer for the first time, and watch his wife, because she starts to cry, because it's the first time she's heard him talk in like 2 years. And I just thought this was very sweet. So here's Roger Ebert using, and once again, it's not perfect, but if you know Roger Ebert, you'll know this voice.
Want to hear the new voice.
Okay.
This is the first version of my computer voice. It's what they call the beta. It still needs improvement, but at least it sounds like me. When I type anything, this voice will speak whatever I type. When I read something, it will read in my voice. I have got to say, in first grade, they said I talked too much, and now I still can.
Aww.
That is awesome.
Isn't that just wonderful? I don't think we're going to see him rushing back to television anytime soon.
No, I think it would need a lot of improvement.
Yeah, but I think it's just a really sweet thing that we can actually hear Roger Ebert talk again. You know, it's like,
well, like, I mean, it's audible enough that if something came up of importance enough that people wanted to know Roger Ebert's opinion, you would really kind of get now his opinion, because that is his voice, and we know that voice. So,
can I say, though, as a counterpoint to that, I mean, isn't part of the, well, I don't know if fun is the right word, but of losing your voice, getting that sweet, like, computer voice?
Well, it's funny, if you lose
a limb, you want a Terminator arm, yeah. You know, big metal, possibly liquid metal arm. It's like, they're like, oh, they just grew another one, it looks just like the other. I was like, check this out, adamantium.
Well, what's funny is that Stephen Hawking apparently has also been approached to create a more natural voice. I don't think they have any recordings of his original voice, but a more natural voice for me, and he's actually turned them down because he's so well known for that voice now. But he doesn't want to lose that.
Have you guys ever heard E equals MC Hawking?
No.
It's this whole series of like rap and hip hop stuff with his voice modulation-y chip thing doing. Oh yeah. I believe my lines is E stands for energy. Yo, that's me. I'm a brilliant scientist and a whack MC.
Well, there
it's
you
all
go.
In the computer voice. Look it up, MC.
Well, look it up. Atomic Betty in our chat room is throwing out that Ebert is prolific in other ways on the net too. Says his blog is great and Twitter stream always good value. Absolutely. I've actually had a look at his blog. It's fantastic. He is the most prolific writer I've ever seen. He just continually.
Well, I think that was one of the great things, was the fact that it would have been such a shame if we had have completely lost him. You know, and just to have that same level of unbiased opinion still available, you know, whether it not be on TV.
I also want to put it on record that we're not doing this Roger Ebert thing to make Charlie feel bad. Now, for those who don't know, Charlie at the Movie Fan House put out a post, and I don't even know if we should be repeating this. I don't want this to sound mean, because I actually don't think it's a mean thing, because, you know, it's fair. I mean,
everyone makes mistakes.
Not everybody knew that he'd lost his voice.
Well, as the newcomer, I would like to know the story.
All right, as a newcomer, Charlie put up on his feed that he felt that Roger Ebert should start a podcast, because he thought it would be really cool for Roger Ebert to be able to podcast his views out there, not realizing that Roger Ebert had.
Well, maybe now he can. So maybe it wasn't such a mess up. Maybe he was preempting this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would like to say that everybody makes mistakes. We've made big mistakes, as in saying that the zombie Nazis of Dead Snow was a Swedish film and it was Norwegian. So, you know, everybody makes mistakes. All right.
Well, on that note, then, biggest mistake then you guys have made collectively?
Putting you on the show?
Second biggest collectively.
Snap.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Is Dead Snow really? Because that's not a huge.
No, but the biggest mistake I ever made on radio. I used to be on Radio 3AW in Melbourne. I used to do video reviews.
Right.
And I actually did this big thing about how Jill Ireland, Charles Bronson's wife, had died and all this sort of stuff, and she was still alive.
Ooh. Oh wow.
She actually died several weeks later, but I actually had misinterpreted the news report I
she
read.
She probably died when she heard you thought.
And
that
I had to go on the next week and apologize to Mr. Bronson and to Miss Ireland.
Now, had Richard Wilkins been involved in some way?
No. This was all me, baby. This was all me, baby.
No sympathy for you at all.
No, it was all me, and it was a big mistake. But as I say, everybody makes mistakes. So, I was young and stupid when I was doing 3AW. We've made mistakes on the show. We've printed retractions before. You know, we've basically said, and that's the beauty of doing this show is that we try and get out as much information as we can. Mistakes do get made.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, and just for the record, I'm not going to
admit to a mistake.
No, I'm not going to harp on this, but I'm not trying to big us up too much. But I think out of podcasts I've listened to, we're actually not that bad.
That's
I've
true.
Seen some huge fuck ups. And, we're definitely not quite...
Yeah. All right. Well, as I say, I'm not saying I'm perfect because I'm not setting myself up for everybody to be hanging out there going, is he making a mistake? Is he making a mistake? We got to put him out.
I kind of like that, though.
Exactly. You'll get people going, come on, like, more people listening. I think it's a good tactic.
Dude, it would be great to have that fan, the fan that just wants to rip on us every week.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of that way with a couple of podcasts. Anyway, all right. Let's move on. Kaziki, Dave's in the house.
What's up, Dave?
Dave Kaziki is in our chat room, and he's basically saying,
"And Josh is a knob, apparently."
And he basically says, "We are awesome."
Yeah.
All right.
Dave. See, even when he's not here on screen, he's here in spirit.
Absolutely.
And that's how. We
and
like
all
him.
I can say to that is, Dave, why aren't you packing? For those who don't know, Dave is going to America tomorrow. So.
Cock. You suck, dude. Seriously, it's totally not fair that you're getting that trip.
All right, let's move on. We got a lot to get through. Next up in the news. Wait a minute. We've got a trailer.
I am jealous. Jealous.
I'm going to throw in a trailer right here and basically say...
No.
All right, we seem
to live in the past, man.
We seem to have completely lost control here for a second. Let's dig ourselves.
That's because Dave just arrived.
Funny how you have that effect on us, Dave. All right, we're going to play a trailer here because this trailer came up, and it's slightly out of order on the show notes, but I'm going to play this trailer now because I want Josh's opinion on this. Pablo's opinion as well, but Josh is the resident horror fan here. I've never heard of this film. This trailer came up, and I kind of went, huh? And I watched it going, I'm intrigued. The word I've got is intrigued. I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but I'm intrigued. All right, so here it is. This is a movie called Afterlife, and for God help me, I cannot pronounce the name of the director. If any of you want to have a shot at it, it's at the bottom of your show notes. Think about it while the trailer's on. All right, here's the film Afterlife with Liam Neeson and Christina Ricci.
Your blood no longer circulates through your body. Your brain cells are slowly dying. Your body's already decomposing. You're dead.
I'm not dead. Oh my God. Wake up!
Anna, come on.
No way! Anna! Just let me go. Please.
You're still in denial. They just see you as a dead body on a slab. Only I can see you as you really are.
But I'm not dead!
I'm the only one who can hear you now.
Then prove to me that I'm really dead.
She's not dead, is she?
Let me help!
Anna!
To look beautiful for your funeral.
This is how they're all going to remember you.
All right, what the?
Yeah, that's... yeah. Not since Inception have I seen a trailer that...
What the?
What the?
It's curious. Like, I mean, part of me wants to watch it.
It's, like, intriguing.
Well, yeah, it started off kind of like Universal Soldier. Then it went all ghost.
I think my biggest problem with it so far is just the fact that it's got Liam Neeson in it. That's basically where it went wrong, was casting him for
anything.
I know,
you've got a real thing
about
Liam Neeson.
No, I really do. Like, I totally now cannot take that man seriously on screen. When he talks, it seriously, anything he does sounds phoned in. And just like, it's like, he's not creepy enough. Like, the black guy from Candyman as that character.
Was it Tony Todd?
Yeah, would have been awesome. Like, that would have been creepy, right? And cool. He just comes off as like, I'm not quite here, but
he's
going to tell you.
He's quite paternal. Like, he's...
Yeah, he's just... Yeah, I just... I can't
well,
really...
Well, look, I will say that I find him miscast completely when it comes to voice acting.
Mm.
People really want to...
Although he was wonderful as Aslan. I loved his voice.
No, see, this is... I heard at one point that Brian Cox was...
Oh, man, that
slated for Aslan. And
awesome.
When I heard that, I went, awesome. Then all of a sudden I go to the cinema and there's Liam Neeson. I'm like, why are you... I don't want to be soothed.
Brian Cox, for those who don't know, would have been... what's the most populous thing
X-Men.
That he's done? X-Men. X-Men 2. He was Stryker in X-Men 2.
And
he was the father in Red Eye.
25th Hour.
He was in 25th Hour. He's a wonderful actor. He was in Deadwood.
He's awesome.
He was the performer in
Trick or Treat.
Really?
Yeah, he was the head.
He was in Trick or Treat. Yeah.
Yes, he was
Super Troopers. He was the
yeah, man. Oh God.
Oh, Octane's brought up Manhunter. Yeah, he was.
Ooh, that's going back.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's going back.
Yeah.
Handler and Long Kiss Goodnight. Yeah, I mean, the guy's a legend.
Long Kiss.
Yeah,
Long Kiss Goodnight. He was awesome in Long Kiss.
The guy's a legend. I just throw a couple out. Digital Angel says she can't wait for this film.
Look, I'm going to say that I will definitely watch it as a horror fan, but I do not see... Like, I actually almost guarantee that this may not even hit cinemas here. I just...
Oh,
I
think it'll go...
Feeling.
Yeah, no, I have a funny feeling it'll go straight to
I reckon we're
going
to get this one in our video section.
Can anybody pronounce
the
director's
copy.
Name? Are we going to try and massacre this? It's down the bottom there.
No, man. I'm not going anywhere
so
near that.
To make fun of it, but I... Yeah, I have no
I'm going to have a...
There is so many consonants
and yes,
in that.
And Jeska Walt... Tovik Voslo, I think, or something. I don't know. But I do like the fact that it's also got Justin Long, who, of course, his last horror film was Drag Me to Hell, which was a lot
which
of fun.
Which was awesome.
So, yeah, Drag Me to Hell was awesome. But, I mean, he's gonna have to work awful hard to get rid of the I'm a Mac moniker from...
No, I will... No, you know what, dude? I will never see him as that. For me, he will always be the kid from Jeepers Creepers. That's what I will always see him as.
Waiting.
Waiting, man. He was awesome in that.
Yeah, no, see, I don't...
When he was?
Yeah, no, he
that
was.
And, that and Zach and Mary.
yeah. So yeah, but him and Brandon Ralph in that were both fantastic. Yeah. Very good, very good.
Well,
all right.
Well, can I bring
Thank
something
you.
Up?
Yeah, yeah, me and Dave on the same page there in the chat room. Well done, man.
In regards to Liam Neeson, can I bring something up which may change the tone of the conversation entirely?
Yeah.
I like the topic. Before you go on, the topic, Betty has basically said, looks like they saved a bit of a budget on the Richie's wardrobe.
Yes. Corpse bread.
All right, what was your point?
Liam Neeson, his wife recently passed, did she not?
She did, yes. Natasha Richardson had a fatal skiing accident.
Now, yeah, like was this film made after that?
I think it was made after. He also made Taken afterwards as well. So
yeah,
he has been working against
it. Because can I add...
No, but I'm saying this is would be quite a difficult or interesting topic for him.
That's true.
They, oh, wow, yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I thought Taken would be...
I think he actually took a lot of aggressions out.
In Taken, yeah,
because Taken's a really visceral film.
Yeah,
but you're right.
He was brilliant. He was really.
Yeah, he was. He did a really good job in Taken. Yeah. I really like Taken. We talked a lot about that last week because of the other Europa Corps film that we did last week. What's it called? From Paris with Love.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
No,
okay.
Dude. Funnily
is
enough, both of them. Both
yeah,
of them,
I enjoyed it.
Is quite.
I know the trailer is quite possibly one of the worst cut trailers I've ever seen, and the film is not a great film. Dave and I will probably review it again now, but it wasn't a great film, but it was a lot of fun.
Sure.
It was one of those films where you sit there and go, disengage brain, eat popcorn, and just, just go for the ride, because it was a lot of fun. It's made by the same people who made Taken, same director and so forth, but it doesn't have the same guts as Taken has. Sure. Taken was really quite something, I thought. It was, and not to push the pun, but it took a lot of money at the box office. So, all right. So now,
I think the recently deceased wife is an interesting.
I hadn't actually thought about that. That's actually, like, I mean, now that you say that, that is actually one of the reasons I'm now going to go see it, because I want to see how he handles that on set. Like, I mean, as much as you can say actors are actors, a situation like that can really change the way you would portray
And there's
something.
A theory that his will get very emotional in this film, well, or has the potential to get very emotional in this film.
Even looking at him in the trailer, it just, I don't know, it looked like he was going through something. You know, like, it wasn't Liam Neeson being all like, oh, that's, there, dear, you're dead. Everything's fine. Yeah. We're going to go to the magical land of Narnia.
Well,
come with me.
He could have.
Here's your Pip-Boy. You know, like...
Game reference.
Yeah, he actually looked a little, I don't know, uncomfortable or disturbed himself. It wasn't like he was being creepy. It was just kind of like... It seemed like it was really...
Well, what was probably going through his mind was, how the fuck do you pronounce the director's name?
I could see that. I could see that.
All right, let's move on a little bit here and say that Tim Burton's at it again. All right.
Wait, let me guess. It's a gothic film that features Candy Stripes and Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter in some way.
And Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, boom.
All right. Seth Graham Greene, the author of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Sense and Sensibilities and Sea Monsters, has come out with a new book called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. For those in the chat room, I've got the book cover on screen right now. Now, the film rights have already been picked up, and it is actually going to be produced by Burton and Timur Bekmambetov, who did Wanted, and this team has... worked as a producing team once before with the film Nine, which Josh and Dave and I did not give the best, most favorable review to several months ago. So it'll be very interesting. We don't know at this point whether it's going to be animated, whether it's live action. We don't know anything about it at this point, except for the fact that they are very interested in bringing this to the screen. This is not the first of Seth Graham Greene's books to come to the screen.
Is it just me, though, or does, like, I mean, just that picture of him, he really does look like he could have been involved in something like that. Like, it's funny that I can totally associate those two words together and have no...
Abraham Lincoln Vampire.
I totally believe that he could have been a vampire hunter.
Have you seen the trailer?
Funny. I don't have the trailer loaded up, but if you go to YouTube, you can actually see this trailer. Just look for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter book trailer.
Yeah.
And it's not a trailer to the movie, it's a trailer to the release of the book, and it's kind of cheesy, but it's very funny same time.
It really works.
Now, the other one that, of course, is coming to the screen sometime soon is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which the option has been picked up. It's being produced by Natalie Portman. She actually purchased the rights, and she wants to play the lead in it.
Okay.
At this point, we haven't got anybody signed to direct it or the screenwriter or anything.
Kenneth Branagh, he loves that shit.
He's off busy at the moment. So it'll be very interesting to see what they do with this. It'll be also very interesting to see what... I'm hoping that Natalie Portman got the joke and brings us a film that is like Zombieland in Pride and Prejudice era.
Well, you know what? Like, I actually can see her doing that role. Like, I don't actually...
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, like, she's got that ability, I reckon, to play that kind of role.
We all forget...
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Liam Neeson is Mr. Darcy.
We all forget that Natalie Portman is actually a really wonderful actress.
Oh, yeah, she can.
And... unfortunately, she
also can take the piss out of herself.
That's right. But unfortunately, she did the three George Lucas movies, and everybody forgot that she actually could act. She was...
What George Lucas movies? Those films were never made. I don't understand what you're talking about.
One day we're going to have an open...
What movie?
We're going to have an open mic discussion about all of this. But anyway, not right now. But the point is that she was absolutely amazing in Leon. She was absolutely amazing in the film Beautiful Girls. And she was amazing in... Closer.
Right.
You know?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's actually...
She's in the wig. Dancing.
Actually, my favorite character...
That's my Nelly Portman
that
dance
Colin,
for watching.
Actually, I thought he was... Are you done?
Are you distracted enough yet?
A little bit, yeah. No, I can hold on to it, though. She was brilliant, but my favorite character in that will always be... Clive Owen, who is just
oh, Clive Owen, that's
such a prick, man.
When he goes, I'm a fucking Neanderthal. that
was a good one.
Honestly, the scene that totally slays me is the scene where he's in
For Closer.
No. It doesn't spoil anything. Just the scene where he's in the office talking to Jude Law, and then just as he walks out, you think he's being a nice guy, and he just drops that one line at the end that just destroys him. one, like, three words destroys Jude Law's character in one go, and I was just like, ow.
I thought Closer was actually a really good film. I was really impressed. I remember sitting there watching it for the first 15 minutes or so going, I don't understand what's going on. Sure. You know, it's like, but I dug that film. I really did dig it.
And all right. We're totally off track.
We are totally off track. So let's go and talk about Stephen Lang. Stephen Lang, for those who don't know, is in Avatar. Here's a picture of him.
Ah.
He was the colonel, the insane colonel. He has just, I shouldn't jump the gun. He is in deep negotiation, and it looks like it's pretty much a go-ahead that he is going to play the lead bad guy in the new Conan movie, which we covered.
Awesome.
Which we covered last week.
So it's going to be James Earl Jones then.
Yeah, but you know, he's playing a different character. Thulsa Doom apparently is not in the new Conan film. They're actually going with, really? with a different... Because Thulsa Doom...
Oh, well, that would be in Red Sonja then, I assume, if they did it.
Well, I don't know. See, Thulsa Doom was a long-term character in Conan. He wasn't like... You meet him, finish him, and that's all over. Yeah. Thulsa Doom was kind of like this overarching thing, whereas I think with Conan, they're actually going for a much closer story. He's going to play the character of Kalar Singh, or hopefully he's going to play the character of Kalar Singh. We covered this last week with the other casting of... what was this? Momoa as Conan and so forth. So if you go back to listen to last week and you can hear a little bit more about the film that is moving ahead very briskly at this point. They are supposed to start shooting mid-March. So it really is finally going to happen. It is not, as a lot of people suspected, the King Conan film, which they were trying to get Schwarzenegger to come back for. It is a reboot. They are going back to the Robert E. Howard novels and actually trying to do it again properly.
Can I ask... Is
no, you can't.
Kalar Singh any relation to Khan Noonan Singh?
That sounds a bit like that.
Because I want that to be like some continuity in there. Some,
no, but it's funny you mention that because there was a rumor kicking around at one point for Star Trek II, which basically has a release date now, by the way. They're talking about 2012. That they are talking about bringing Khan back. Because it's a reboot. Because they've rebooted it now.
I thought they were going to bring Ricardo back.
God, I hope not.
That would be tricky.
I really hope not.
Yeah, well, you know.
Dude, seriously, Khan, there is only one Khan, and there will only ever be one Khan.
Ricardo Montalban with that chest.
phony chest.
The phony chest. Although, reports say that actually was his real chest.
That's for real, not for play.
They say it was for real. They say he went in and worked out and built it up. I don't believe it.
Yeah, you know.
Good on him. If he did, fantastic. If he did, good on you.
I think maybe, like, if he was bench pressing that midget in Fantasy Island, he could have...
The plane.
Every time he lives, he says the plane.
All right, we've reached new levels of we've reached new levels of politically incorrect with the fact that they have actually removed Sacha Baron Cohen and Ben Stiller doing a sketch on this year's Oscars. Originally, the sketch, according to reports, was supposed to be Sacha Baron Cohen coming out as a female Na'vi. And basically comes out and talks to Ben Stiller for a while and then goes out and tries to hit on Cameron. They actually pulled the sketch from the Oscars. It will not happen because James Cameron is actually not known for having much of a sense of humor.
Sure.
And they said that the last thing they would really want is James Cameron walking out on the Oscars.
Okay, better sense of humor than Ridley Scott or less of a sense?
Less.
Less.
Wow.
Yeah, Cameron is really? Not known for having...
Really?
He is really, 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 really... up himself.
Wow.
And so yes, they have pulled the sketch and Sacha Baron Cohen. You will not see Sacha Baron Cohen come out as a female.
Which is not a bad thing, really.
Yeah, which is
I would have been as funny as fuck.
Oh, I would have been funny, but I'm not gonna miss him.
No.
Like you know
Dude, you know me, I don't even like Borat or
I love Borat.
I do love Borat.
So yeah, no, I had no care really about
but,
this.
But look, Ben Stiller has always done really interesting sketches on
much
the
better
Oscars.
Than his movies.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And except for Tropic Thunder, which I really enjoyed. But
yeah, well,
it's a rarity.
Everybody gets one.
That's what everybody gets one.
Nice.
So I think that the sketch, I have a feeling the sketch is probably doomed for failure. At the best of times.
Right.
Okay, we have one more news story and one more trailer, and then we're going to get into these film reviews. And my God, we're almost right on track.
Get out.
I know, it's not right.
Oh, don't worry, we'll mess that up.
We'll mess it up. All right, so first of all, this is just a quick one, because all I could think was, really? Really? We actually touched on this in Geek Actually Tech, by the way, but we'll kind of come back on this. But Martin Scorsese has basically
has lost his mind. I'm sorry. This news story is insane.
Man's a genius. He's the... thumbprint of a generation.
Absolutely.
I'm going to quote from the man himself. The man himself actually says, "We see depth for the most part. What,
sure.
What do you mean for the most part?
For the most part. Not always.
Not always, but yeah. Apparently, you know, we've had a few. Maybe we don't see death anymore. But he says, we see death.
People with one eye don't see death.
Way too far apart. They don't really see. Like horses. Really,
I'm sorry. You know what? I really shouldn't look at the chat room because every now and again, I just kind of glance over. And
what, deep negotiation with a gerbil?
Yeah. I look at that and go, what have I missed?
just keep doing the show, Dave.
Just
ignore the chat
on
room.
Keep on swimming. All right. Digital, you're always very, very good for me to come around and find weird things.
No, stop. Okay, just back to.
He says, we see depth for the most part. We go to the theater, it's in depth.
What?
What does that even mean?
No, it's not.
It's not in depth.
Why couldn't a film like Precious... Let me say that again. Why couldn't a film like Precious be in 3D?
You mean Precious based on the novel by Sapphire.
That's the one. What, so we can actually have the ashtrays come out of this? You know?
I don't see...
Maybe like children just shooting at you. pregnancy!
Anyway, he goes on to say that he says Precious in 3D, it should be. And basically the article in Yahoo News goes on to talk about the fact that he thinks that 3D has come of age, and he believes that basically all films should be in 3D because it is a tool and we should start composing for the fact that we do see in depth in real life, so why not see depth in the movies? And he is actually saying that his next film will probably be in 3D.
What? No, that's good. Let him do it. Yeah. He'll be distracted.
Let him
Other
do it.
People will make movies and be like, hey, I made 3D movies.
At this point, I think...
Good.
I think at this point, I need to quote... John Carpenter's film Dark Star.
Please.
When he's in the elevator. Have you seen Dark Star?
Do not remember it.
Oh, man.
I keep thinking of Star Man.
If you guys haven't seen Dark Star, it's John Carpenter's very first film. It was actually his graduation film from USC.
This isn't the Jeff Bridges one.
No. This is basically about a bunch of guys who fly around in a ship blowing up unstable planets, and they're all potheads, and it's very, very funny. The caption on the film was bombed out in space with a spaced out bomb.
is this like Heavy Metal, the movie?
No, it predates that by many years. But anyway, the point is that there's actually one point where Sergeant Pinback is stuck in the elevator and he's pushing buttons at random to try and get out of this elevator, and of course he hits the button that says that he's going to clean the elevator, and all I can say to Martin Scorsese is the quote that comes out of Dan O'Bannon's mouth at that point when he gets, or sorry, out of the elevator's mouth at that point where he goes, good for you. And so all I can say to Martin Scorsese is good for you. I just think that at this point in time 3D is still an event film thing. I'm just going to go on my high horse here for a second and say it is an event film thing.
No, I
it
agree.
It is something that you go for the experience, for the theatrical experience for certain movies. I don't want to put on the dorky glasses and have to sit through 3D to watch something like Blindside. I don't think the film needs it.
Dude, like,
but it's an entirely different medium. It's like, you know, a novel is different to a comic book, is different to a movie, is different to a 3D movie. They're all different ways of telling a story, and why would you... You know,
like,
it's a gimmick.
Fantastical, over-exaggerated movies. Like, I mean, you know, like
Alice
in Wonderland, you know, Avatar, things like that. These make sense for putting them in that medium.
And you can also use it for the shock impact of it. My Bloody Valentine does not work as a 2D film, but as a 3D film at the cinema, I had a blast. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This is not a film you go and catch up with on DVD later, because it's not a very good film. But it was a blast at the cinema in 3D.
Did you guys see Beowulf in 3D or in 2D?
I saw it in 2D, unfortunately.
Went to see it in 3D and the cinema really died, and I just never went back and saw
it. See, when Beowulf came out, the Ritz hadn't got its 3D screen yet, and so I just went and saw it in 2D. So.
What did you think?
I actually didn't mind Beowulf. But I think it's a flawed film, but I think it's got some really interesting stuff in it.
Winstone being a badass. What else do you
I thought Ray Winstone was fast. I thought his voice was perfect, but I did get a little bit tired of him saying, kill your monster. Monster!
I will kill your monster.
So I got a little tired of some of the dialogue. But, you know, overall, I think it's actually one of the better... Although the animation has gotten better over time. We're going to a whole issue here. But it is one of the better Robert Zemeckis mocap films. So, anyway, I think it's very interesting that Digital Angel in our chat room has basically said that the movie Precious was difficult enough in 2D.
Ouch. I have to say that there's a lot of scene play that I don't really need coming out at the screen at me. Like, maybe it would have made it more effective, but definitely more disturbing. And I'm quite happy to watch this at home. Plus, you know, 3D does hurt my eyes, and I just really can't stomach the idea of going to every movie in 3D. I'll just end up blind.
Yeah, I think, as I say, I think, Josh, you hit the nail on the head. I think 3D is for those fantastical out there films. It's for the experience. It's for the moment. And
like Sense and Sensibility.
And I do respect somebody like James Cameron and zombies.
Well, are we really? All right.
No, you don't need to high five. All right.
You totally just high five.
There you go. High five on live to air. There you go. What was I going to say? I was going to say one more thing. I do respect James Cameron. Recently, I read an article by him who actually said that as far as he is concerned, 3D is still for the event. Yeah. And he said that when he made Avatar, he actually filmed the film as a 2D film, even though he's shooting in 3D. Oh. But he said he composed every shot the same way he would compose a 2D film, because for him, the 3D was not a gimmick.
Yeah.
To him, it was just supposed to be a tool to add depth to his world. He knew that the majority of people, smart cookie, good businessman, he knew that the majority of people will end up watching this film in 2D. Because when it comes out on DVD and so forth, that's how they're going to see it. So exactly. The film couldn't be made as a gimmicky 3D film because the majority of people are still going to see it in 2D. You know?
Not Martin Scorsese.
He's not well, Martin Scorsese, Martin apparently not.
He sees everything in 3D now. He used to sometimes see things in 3D. But now everything.
Yeah, because life...
He doesn't even look at paper anymore.
Because life, on the most part, has depth.
Refuses to take anything that's two-dimensional.
All right, we got one more trailer, and then we're going to get into these film reviews. We have two film reviews, so we better get into them real quick. This is just a really quick one. This is The Prince of Persia. New trailer has come out for it. Really? Yes. We try and keep up on these things. Prince of Persia is kind of probably one of the event films of this summer coming up. Jerry Bruckheimer produced, Mike Newell directed, Jake Gyllenhaal, who I know you're a huge fan of.
I'm a massive, massive fan of. I love his work from when he played a retard in Donnie Darko, right up until he played a retard in, what was the one, Jarhead, or... when it played a retard in that other film he did, like...
So tell us how you really
feel.
I'm serious.
Just something I have to pass on to Dave here. I've just had a message from Dave, our other Dave, that just wants to make sure that you understand that he wants to portray that Sands of Time will be the greatest film of all time. Thank you. Can't escape it. He's always going to get it.
Thank you, Dave. Very kind of you. All right, so here it is. Here's the latest and I think last trailer for Prince of Persia before it comes out finally. I will state right off the bat that the jury is still out on this.
Oh, no. My jury's come back.
Has it? All right, so here is the latest trailer for Prince of Persia.
This is no ordinary dagger. Releasing the sand turns back time. Only the holder of the dagger is aware of what's happened. Did you see that?
Prince Dastan, have you wondered how you could have found such a treasure? Are you not curious why an orphan from the streets would be chosen to become a prince? The gods have a plan for you, a destiny. There are those who would use the power of the dagger to destroy the world.
Time will erase everything.
You must protect it. Who are these demons?
Assassins, trained in the art of quick death.
The secret guardian temple. The one place the dagger can be safely hidden. Take it there, Dastan.
You really enjoy telling me what to do, don't you?
Only because you're so good at following orders.
Yeah, don't press your luck. The dagger must be found.
Such a noble prince. Weeping to assist the fallen beauty.
Who said you were a beauty?
There must be a reason why you can't take your eyes off me.
It's time. Give me the dagger! How did you do that?
It's impossible.
Difficult, not impossible.
Good. God damn that, man.
All I can you know say what? Is I'm... there's lots of leaping and jumping and falling and running and leaping and jumping and falling. And
look, running. I just say God damn that, man, because like I know it's going to be the same situation as Pirates of the Caribbean where I will have no idea what happened in that film when I get to the end of it. I'll just be like, seriously, it's just like they could have put white noise in front of me and I still would have came out the same way because every time I leave his films, I'm just like, what the fuck just happened?
It's because you're lost in his beautiful blue eyes.
All right, I'm gonna go out and say that that Mike Newell knows how to make a movie. I'm gonna say the film is probably gonna look beautiful. You know, it's gonna be sensational. It's gonna have some really nice CG work in it. All I can say is at this point, though, that the trailer just leaves me absolutely cold.
Really? No, I can't say that. And like, dude, you know I'm the cynic. I look at that and I just go, you know what? It's gonna be a fucking ride. And that's, dude, I'm going to that like the same way I would go and go to a carnival or something like that and taking one of those ridiculous rides where you go up in the air. Roller coaster, that's the word I'm looking for.
That's the word.
But it's like, that's what I'm expecting. I'm going to go in, I'm going to go around in circles, and I won't remember any of it.
Now, I could be completely wrong, because I remember seeing the trailers for Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, and I actually went, really? They made a film of the ride, and why the hell are they doing this? And this is really stupid looking. And then I went to see the film at an advanced screening, and I had the most fun I've had at a cinema in so long, and absolutely loved the first Pirates of the Caribbean film from beginning to end, and found myself humming the theme on the way home, and, you know, just absolutely loved Pirates of the Caribbean. So I could be completely wrong about this.
Did you guys see Silent Hill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know how it looked exactly like the video game?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they did this fantastic job of the film looking like, you know, and when you saw the trailer, like, wow, it looks just like Silent Hill. Then the writing story and, well, I'm not going to say the acting.
But you see the difference, I'll stop you for one sec there. I will say one thing. The difference between the two films is the Jerry Bruckheimer film, it goes so fast you don't have time for storyline.
No, I understand, but my point is, all I can tell from the trailer now is that they got the look right.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? I will totally agree with that. Yeah. They've got the look right,
like,
and they've got enough...
I'm just worried that they'll ignore the story entirely.
Well, yeah, but I will say that the stuff that they have put in the trailers seems to quite heavily follow the actual script of the story. Like, you've got him finding the dagger, whether or not the in-betweens, the important thing is the time stopping's quite good. Yeah. It's got the cool things
It looks like they've thrown everything in there, and it looks fantastic. It's just that we won't know anything until, you know, it comes out.
Dave, you fucking legend. Dave's just put, aren't explosions plot?
I have to also point out that I made a mistake before, and my apologies. The person who actually said that Precious was hard to take in 2D was actually Atomic Betty, not Digital Angel.
Oh, right.
I actually got that. So, Atomic, full credit to you for that one because I agree with you. Yeah. All right. Have we had enough of this?
I think we should start doing these reviews, otherwise we're going to be here.
Let's start with
hours.
Precious. Precious is one that seems to be on everybody's lips, and I think that Blindsight, quite frankly, is the easier one to do. So,
I'm going to open up and say something about Precious real quick.
Just hold that thought.
Sure. I guess I'm not going to anymore.
Hold that thought, because we'll actually start
He's
the review.
He's going to do it, just
as
right
we
now.
Always do. We always start with the trailer for Precious. All right?
Okay.
So first of all, let's just say that Precious is based on the novel Push by Sapphire, and it's directed by Lee Daniels. It stars...
every time you're talking about this movie from now on, dude, you have to give it its full name.
Oh, you do? I mean, so it seems that that's the way you have to do it. Now, Gabourey Sidibe, I think her name is pronounced. I'm not sure, but she plays Precious. Monique as her mother, Mary. Paula Patton as Miss Rain. Mariah Carey as Mrs. Weiss, who now I see her surname was Weiss. I don't buy her as a Weiss. I would have bought her as an Italian. I would have bought her as a... But I don't buy her as a Weiss.
Anyway.
But that's not the best, neither here nor there. Sherry Shepherd is also Lenny Kravitz. These people also co-star in it. Basically, the story is basically... I think it can be summed up basically by its caption on the poster, which is "Life is hard." Basically, the story is about Precious, a 16-year-old girl who has been suffering from abuse by her family, sexual abuse by her stepfather, her actual father, and abusive mother. And it's about her journey to try and get out of that world. That's kind of summed it up in a nutshell. Let's have a look at the trailer to Precious. Based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Thank you. This is going to be fun.
We will talk more about its title in a minute as well. But here's a little bit of Precious.
My name is Clarice Precious Jones. and I want to be on the cover of a magazine. I wish I had a light-skinned boyfriend with real nice hair. But first, I want to be in one of them BET videos.
You're a dummy. Don't nobody want you. Don't nobody need you. School ain't gonna help none. Take your ass down to the welfare.
You're 16, you're still in junior high school, and you're pregnant with your second child. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about home? But you're gonna have to talk to somebody if you want your check, sweetie. People tell me my
life will be Precious, I'm hungry. You plan on putting some food in that frying pan?
My favorite color is purple. I sing well, and I'm here because I love to teach.
I'm Joanne. My favorite color is fluorescent beige, and I'm here to get my GED.
Paris, something you do well?
Nothing.
Everybody's good at something.
Precious, you gonna stand up there and look down at me like you're a woman? You don't know what real women do. Real women sacrifice. Now smile about that, you fat bitch.
Talk about the abuse in your household. You know what I'm talking about.
You sit there and judge me, and you write them notes on your pad about who you think I am. Nobody loves me.
People do love you, Precious.
Please don't love me. Love ain't done nothing for me. Love beat me. Make me feel worthless.
Your baby loves you.
Okay, so that's a little bit of Precious. Now, Pablo, you're our guest here today.
Sure.
So,
and you had something to say.
And you had
something
to say.
I've been waiting
before.
Ever since you said that to hear what it was. So
what did you think of Precious?
Anyone who doesn't like this movie is a racist.
Oh, don't start with that. God. By the way, I want to say goodbye to Dave. Have fun packing and have a great time in America.
Fun,
I'm incredibly jealous. He's heading off to get out.
Yeah, and I just want to say, Dave, can you restate that so that we can get Pablo to say his thing, but actually give it the right title, please?
Oh, sorry. What did you think of Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire?
Well, I think Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Now, guys, those who are listening to podcasts wondering what we're going to, that is actually the title of the film.
That's the full title.
The full title of the film is Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, which I think is the most ridiculous film title in history.
Well, and also the most unnecessary.
Did you ever work out with Percy Jackson if it was the full thing or was it just Percy?
No, it's in America, it's called Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Lightning Thief.
That's a fairly lengthy title.
It is. And in Australia, it's called Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. They actually changed the title. They gave us a simplified title because obviously we were too stupid to understand the full
title. I think we would just get too annoyed.
I just think you should be called Joshua Jackson and the Lightning Thief. A lot more
Joshua Jackson. All right. Pablo, what was your opinion of Precious based on the novel Push by Sapphire?
Well, I saw this movie at 5 a.m. after being out all night and drinking. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved it. I was amazed. It blew me away. I am speechless.
You're speechless.
I am speechless. No, it was just amazing. It was so well done. It was surprising. It was confronting. It didn't pull any punches. Every actor in it like really did their job.
Amazing.
Actually. I would nominate any actor in that movie for any award. Any award, doesn't matter. Like, you know, what's the one they give?
Josh is starting to seethe over in the corner.
I'm not seething. Not seething at all. I'm just going, oh.
What's that one they give to people? You know, the Nobel Peace Prize. Doesn't matter.
He's pulling a Dave on us now, I think.
I thought it was absolutely amazing that such a film exists and that people can see it.
Okay.
That's high praise. Josh?
It is.
Well, I mean,
Dave, time to bring us back to reality.
I love the way you just open with me like that. Like I'm the guy that's gonna. Yeah, you may have liked this, but here's why you shouldn't. No. No, look, I mean, I explained to Dave when we had a chat before the show that I agree with Pablo in some aspects. I think the actors definitely did their job in the most part. I think that it was confronting. It was very well done for that. But the problem for me is that individual scenes were confronting. You know what I mean? Like the actual some of the work, especially the start of the film, I expected a lot from it because of how good the start of the film plays out. There's a bit of a slow periods, but when she goes to these fantastical places or when she's having these flashbacks, they're very well shot. The scene that will leave me devastated forever is that horrible scene where basically things are happening to her.
Is this the father scene?
Yeah, the father scene, which we'll leave it at that. But the way that that's shot...
No, we won't leave it at that. The scene where she is raped by her father... Exactly.
Biological father.
By her biological father. Including that... And this isn't spoiling anything, because it's near the beginning of the film, actually. But including that one really tasteful, quote-unquote, sarcasm here, shot of his fingers dipping into the Vaseline jar in the middle of it.
For me, yeah.
It's like... Oh, was my
it,
God!
Did you find that a bit Requiem for a Dream? That scene
it was
that
a was yeah.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah. And the scene that scars me is just the belt coming off. Mm. That scene there, just like that's imprinted in my memory now, just because of like how slow it's done and
that
fact
scene
that
was
you
actually
see the skin ripple and stuff.
Brilliantly directed.
Exactly, and it was. It sort really of like was. When I got that was kind of where I was expecting. And then the roof, they have a very nice CG section where she kind of breaks away in her own mind and takes off to another place, and that was very well shot, and then kind of went back into this scene by scene story again, and it was like it didn't hold me after that, because
I'd like to point out that Atomic Betty has also mentioned another scene that you were talking about last night.
The steaming
We'll let you take that one away as well, because yes, Atomic Betty, absolutely, that also was
exactly
another, was
and
another
it's,
moment
it's that kind of flashes and things like that. I think my overview for this film is that I'm not sure what it was supposed to be. And that's the reason that I have so much problem with this film. The end and the way that this film finishes off doesn't tell a story. It kind of ends... And there's a difference between ending ambiguously, you know, and sort of allowing people to make their own decisions and kind of not finishing up. This is obviously, like, me and Dave believe that this was based on a true story.
My understanding was that this was based on a true story. Having done research on this further, especially last night going through various articles, it wasn't. It was just a work of fiction. And it kind of lost its power on me.
Yeah, because for me, like, one of my big mistakes that I think they pulled was when you finish this film and she walks out of the office and takes off, you need to finalize what sort of a film this is.
It's kind of spoilery to let you know this, but I mean, we're not really going... It's not really spoiling because it is the kind of film that it is. It's got to be experienced more than it's about its scenes. Mm. But I'm with you, Josh. I actually found that my biggest problem with this film was I had no resolution.
Yeah, and it's not so much the resolution of, yes, I understand that certain films you can walk away and just accept that she had to continue living life, but it leaves me unbalanced in the film. It's like, am I supposed to be digesting this as a film with a sad ending and taking it for what it is and absorbing it?
Yes.
Or am I supposed to be seeing this as a film that is supposed to be giving me an uplifting message?
You can't, you're
saying,
kind of,
so
just
you'd like
move
to be
on.
Told what to feel is...
What I wanted to know was what happened. And the thing is, we're building up in this film, we're kind of building this whole thing about her. It's about her escaping that life,
yeah.
right?
Mm.
But everything is being heaped on this girl, right? Yeah, without giving too much away. I mean, she's being repeatedly raped.
Giving everything away.
All right, she's also HIV positive. There you go, spoilers for Precious. But, you know, the point...
Okay, there you go.
The point is that the girl just keeps getting heaped upon, upon, heaped upon, upon, heaped upon.
Yeah.
And then we start to see this point where she starts to turn around. She starts to get away from things. She starts to move out of this. And then we get this scene at the end, which we won't give away, but the scene at the end where you think, okay, she's finally going to make this move.
Yeah.
And the film ends.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
What I was waiting for was that super on screen to say she went on to write the book Push written by Sapphire, or she lived a fruitful life, or she went on and died a lonely life in a grave somewhere, or whatever. I want to know what happened to her.
I will tell you what happened. She went into space to fight Nazi zombies. And because of her high midichlorian count, she got rid of her HIV. Oh, Oh, HIV is gone.
And there will be a Precious too.
Atomic Betty has said in the chat room that she missed the Vaseline because she had her hands over her eyes through much of that movie. You didn't miss much. Yeah. Let me tell you.
Which is why most people are missing the midichlorians.
I actually want to come back to that that comic that Betty's actually saying, which is that that's exactly my point with this film. Individually, the scenes in this film are harrowing and amazing. Sure. And the acting is brilliant in a lot of parts. Like, the main actress, the fact that she just manages to hold almost no smiles during the entire film. Like, her life is so devastating that she really can't be.
And when you have that moment in the pool with her child,
exactly,
there is a sense of joy in that scene because we haven't had it up until then. Yeah, and so when she is with her son and she's bouncing him in the water, you kind of go, and you feel a weight come off you for that moment. Yeah. And that's powerful. You know,
at the same time, it's amazing that film keeps you cringing, I guess, or keeps you tense that whole time.
Mm. Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I just think
for me that the one thing I would have to attack this film from is just the fact that I wish it was a bit better told story-wise. Like, I mean, we were reading up on it and we found out that the book actually starts almost illiterate. Yeah. And sort of slowly.
Well, that's what they did with the opening credits.
Exactly, which is apparently, which is what they were trying to achieve. And it's, look, I mean, I give them credit for that, but the only other thing.
No pun intended.
The only other thing that I wanted to raise was that I found it hard to accept her fantasy.
I accepted some of them,
and I thought the shot work where she would be seeing things on the wall and so on and so forth, or that scene,
or the one that we both talked about, which was the roof collapsing
exactly
as she's being done by her father. You have the roof collapsing above her.
It's a metaphor,
very effective, and but a very effective metaphor.
Exactly, you know? But I'm not trying to be in any way offensive when I say this, but when most people have a fantasy, like when I, you know, go to a place in my mind and I'm thinking about, it's okay, I'm not going to death.
I'm going to have to channel Dave here. You know?
Yeah, but when I do that, you become something better than yourself. You become the best.
Sorry, Dave.
You become the best part of yourself. And it was interesting because she does talk in the film about the fact that when she imagines herself as a thin, attractive white woman.
When she looks in the mirror, that's what she sees.
Exactly, but that's the only time you see that. Like, right. To put that line earlier in the thing and then have the fantasies, it's hard to live out the fantasies with her when she's, like, I'm not being that person, you know.
Because all the other fantasies, she is her, but dressed in a frock, or her singing in a church, or and so she's not the thin white girl that she fantasizes herself to be.
So you guys are saying you'd rather see a skinny white girl on the screen?
We're not racist. We'd like to be consistent to the storytelling vehicle that they're putting out.
Mm.
They are telling us that that's going to be the tool that they're going to use.
Exactly.
And then they don't use it.
It's just hard to...
I'm with Josh. I think the film, although I sit kind of between the two of you, I actually think the film isn't as bad as Josh thought it was. I actually thought the film was interesting, and I actually I'm kind of putting words in Josh's
mouth. Yes, exactly. No, so, and
I do. Forgive me for that.
Exactly. No, I in no way thought this was a bad film, and I very much want to pull you up on that because I thought the film itself was good. Right. I just think that it definitely shouldn't win any awards for best film. I would accept actors. Right. Yeah. I would accept actors, but I have just out of the choices that are available there, I think there are films that as a whole were better. That's all I'm going to say.
I would put it ahead of Avatar. I'd put it against Half of the Field.
Atomic Benny has made a very, 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 very good point in the chat room. She said, I hate to say it, but we WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, might be a bit overprotected. I have no doubt life is relentlessly grim for many people in Harlem. The story doesn't end for them.
No, look, that had actually come to my mind, and I do understand that, but it's like...
And it says here, a brief glimpse of joy was about Precious having some semblance of control by having her children in her life.
No, and I... That was never what I was trying to state. It's without resolution at the film, I just didn't get the feeling, like, I mean, it did come to me. It did come to me that I sort of pulled it up and went, well, maybe they're trying to make a point with that and say that it's just going to keep going and so on and so forth. But it just, okay, as a film, that point fell flat for me. Like, I didn't get,
I even liked what happened. I liked the fact that we had that ending. I just wanted to know what happened
it next, would have been such know? It would have been such a simple thing.
Wait for
a
sequel directed by Martin Scorsese in 3D.
But what I want to say is,
oh no, Precious, the Navi are attacking.
But for a film,
welcome God to Shutter Island.
Sorry. But for a film that was so over-explanative, like the scenes where they did such great work at being so subtle in the way that they did things. Like when you have the scene where she finds out she has AIDS, no talking, just shot for shot.
Magnificent scene.
Her in that office, you know, just like white noise over the top. Yeah. Her sitting there, going to the other side, having the look on the doctor's face as she's obviously explaining something very terrible. Yeah. And then to pull up the next scene and be like, a basically entire story wrap of everything that's happened up to that point. I was just like, what, we didn't need that. I would have very much rathered you didn't do that.
And they could have actually handled that. As far as I look at it, I could have even handled the exposition if it had been done within the format that we had been establishing. So Precious has writes it down, and then
exactly.
We have the teacher
have
reading it.
Exactly. Have the
reading
teacher
the narration
or having
of
her narrating like she has been the entire.
That's right.
But I like that it didn't stick to that format. That it wasn't, you know, okay, now she's going to narrate. Now this is going to happen.
But that becomes messy for an audience, though, as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly.
There's going to be a consistency to your storytelling arc. And your storytelling technique in this situation, they've established the rules.
Exactly.
And if you then take all those rules and throw them out the window, we sit there and go, that's just messy. That's like not knowing quite how you're putting it together.
Exactly.
You
know? So
I didn't have any trouble following.
Exactly. But I think that's my only point about this film. And I think that it's coming across a lot harsher than I can because it is a film with such acclaim.
We'll summarize in just a minute where we can actually summarize our actual feelings on this film for the listeners. I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, I actually thought that to back up both of your points, I thought the performances, the acting in the film is stellar. Mm. I do agree with Josh. I don't think the film should be the winner of the Academy Award this year. No. I don't think as a film in its entirety it works. Mm. I think it is a film of amazing parts. Mm. And I think those amazing parts stand out because the actors are so good at what they're doing. I actually bought the character that Monique was playing a lot more than Josh did. I know that because Josh has past history with the actress.
With Monique, really?
Not personally, but with the movies she's done, she acts like that.
Whereas I was not familiar with Monique's work, so I'm coming into her fresh. And I got to say that scene between her and Mariah Carey and Precious at the end is emotionally devastating.
Can we just add one little bullet point and just say that Mariah Carey was the closest thing to acting I've ever seen her done.
Well, Mariah, I thought I actually will go one step further and I'll say that I thought Mariah Carey was actually absolutely fine. I mean, I'm not going to say perfect because I think Mariah Carey still got a bit of way to go. But when you compare this to Glitter, you know, you've got to sit there and say that, you know, at least she's trying something. I mean, Mariah Carey is doing a dialect and she's doing a damn good dialect.
Yeah.
She's doing that whole New York Italian thing.
Yeah.
I think the emotional impact, and it's the same thing that Denzel did in Glory way back in the 80s, but that emotional impact of that one tear when Monique is going on was staggering. And I actually sat there, paused it for a second at that point because all that went through my mind at that point was I didn't know Mariah Carey had that in her.
Yeah.
You know? I did not know she had that in her. And I thought that was a revelation.
Mm.
I don't think she's an Academy Award standard actress at this point. I think, though, that this is a step way in the right direction.
Okay.
And I think we're heading for a point where I could actually now say with quite honesty that if I saw Mariah Carey starring in a film, I'm not going to actively avoid the film.
Right.
I'm
going to look at it and say, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt now. I will actually go back. Lee Daniels produced a film just before this called Tennessee, which stars Mariah Carey. Lee Daniels directed Precious, and he said that he cast Mariah Carey on the strength of her performance in Tennessee.
Right.
So it makes me really want to see Tennessee.
Okay.
You know, so I'm curious about Mariah Carey now. They've stripped her of her makeup. They made her more real. They gave her.
I think
her
it's the detachment of her as that personality.
She wasn't being Mariah Carey.
Exactly.
Well, I think. I mean, not to take any credit away from Mariah Carey, but I mean, I think it's the director. I think.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, so maybe if the film shouldn't you know, get an Oscar, or Mariah Carey shouldn't get an Oscar. What do you think about the director?
Lee Daniels, there is a possibility Lee Daniels could be in the running for the Oscar. The only reason why I would say no is the fact that he didn't succeed overall, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. He got great performances, but as a film structure, I think the film fails in its structure a little bit. I think that the fantasy scenes, there were some that worked really effectively, as Josh said. There were some that fell completely flat for me, because I actually felt that when they broke into that fantasy, which is supposed to be, you're supposed to get this feeling of she's escaping from the moment. I actually felt, though, that all they did was took me out of the moment. And so I wanted them, they were so loud and so bold and so this, that by the time you came back from them, the moment was gone. You know, and I speak particularly about the one in the halfway house where her mother comes and tells her father has died. Yeah. And you sit there, we're spoiling Precious all over the place. But, you know, it's not really that kind of film. But, you know, I look at that and I go that moment was completely taken away from me.
Okay.
And I didn't get any impact from that moment at all, because
this is the bit with the motorcycle.
Yes. Well, no, and the fantasy in the middle of the discussion where, when the news is delivered, Lee Daniels cuts to her singing and taking the prize, and she's in the dress, and then it kind of fades back into her mother saying, "Did you hear me? Did you hear me?" And all I could think was, "No, I didn't really hear you at all." You know
what happened?
So I was kind of disappointed. Overall, so I think that the structure, I think where the film succeeds amazingly well is almost every scene that Monique is in. All those scenes in the apartment where that unpredictability.
Yeah.
Now, things
you
I won't...
Felt, I think, you felt Precious's heartache of going back to that house. Like, you didn't, you as a person did not want to go back to that house.
Well, without going into details, I have experience with people like this. And that unpredictable, irrational way of thought, where one minute they'll say, "Can you do something?" And then the next minute they're throwing an ashtray at you. I know personally people like this. And it rings so true. And it is heartbreaking. And all those moments, I could feel for Precious. And I could, you never knew when Monique was just going to snap and do these outrageous, when she drops the baby.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, no.
And you sit there and go, holy crap, what is going on in this household? You know? Yeah. And all of that sort of stuff, I think, is handled amazingly well. That it was amazingly powerful stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't think as an entire film it quite gels together. It's like one of those puzzles where the shapes don't quite match up.
Sure.
And I think that there is a disproportionate difference between some of the stuff where she's in the school as opposed to her family life. You know?
The hospital
scenes, for instance, didn't work for me. Lenny Kravitz didn't work for me.
Lenny Kravitz did not. You know? I will actually say Lenny Kravitz did not work for me.
Well, look,
I found him really
strange. I thought he was really sleazy.
Well, yeah, sleazy, but it's just strange. I mean, I was like, what's he doing? Shouldn't he be speaking or interacting with the rest of the cast? He was just kind of there.
No, he was just there. Just fine.
Yeah, I didn't,
Look, I'll just do my finalization, because we've kind of
let's
been...
Let's wrap this
over,
up, because we've got another film to go into.
Exactly. We're going backwards and forwards, and I think what I really want to say is, look, the individual cast performances are fantastic in almost everyone. Like, the actual direction of scenes in this film are amazing.
The direction of actors in particular is staggering.
The movie as a whole, for me, kind of falls a little bit flat, but I think the reason I'm being so harsh on this film is because we are talking about this as one of the main contenders
for an
award.
One of the best films of the year.
Exactly. And
I really do.
Yeah. Well, again, like, I mean,
each and once again, it's completely subjective. So
exactly. But when we're putting it up for Oscar caliber, right, this is all I'm saying, when we're putting it up for the caliber of an award, and I mean only personally, I'm going to be harsher on this film, and I just say that it's a good film, and if you can handle this kind of film, go watch it, because it's an experience. But I just think I left the film a little bit empty because I didn't know where I was going. It's a bit like the ending to Burn After Reading, where it's like the movie's supposed to end kind of, all, you know, unfulfilled, because that's the thing they're trying to give, but in doing that, they failed me because
they
I just left it going.
That's
they
right.
unfulfilled me, and therefore I was kind of like, well, what? What was I supposed to do?
You can leave a film open-ended. You can leave a film with that kind of ethereal, what happened, No Country for Old Men is a great example of this.
Exactly.
And you can make it work really effectively.
Exactly, and it works because of the fact that it's been set up well for that point.
That's right, whereas I just think that Precious, I don't think story structure wise, and I don't know if it's the same in the book, but story structure wise, I don't think the film quite gels. I think it's a, once again, my personal opinion is, yes, I do recommend people go see it. I think it is a good film. I don't think it is going to win the Oscar. I would say that it's probably, if you were going looking at the best films of the year or the most talked about films of the year, etc., I would say it would probably be in my top 20 of the year, but I would not put it in that Oscar caliber. I wouldn't put it into the same, I wouldn't put it in the same breath as The Hurt Locker.
Really?
You know, as an example.
I
wouldn't put it into the same breath as Inglourious Basterds. I wouldn't put it into the same breath as probably, I haven't seen it yet, I'm seeing it this weekend, but I imagine I'm probably going to enjoy An Education more. So we'll have a look, and we'll talk about An Education maybe next week if we've got time. But the point is that I think that it is a good film. It is a brilliant film of parts. I think it, and I have no doubt in my mind that Monique is going to win Best Supporting Actress.
I think
if Monique doesn't win Best Supporting Actress, looking at that supporting actress cast, at list that's on the Oscars, then there is something wrong. Because I think, if nothing else, that last scene is powerful stuff. And when you compare that to Sandra Bullock, which we're going to talk about next, they're in a different category, of course, but when you compare that, there is no competition.
No, absolutely.
You know? Okay. And so, all right, so final thoughts, Pablo. What did you think? Give us your final thoughts. Summarize this up. Would you recommend it?
I would absolutely recommend it to anyone that has the patience to see it.
Exactly. It's, and also,
you
know,
and if you love explosions and transforming robots, you will hate the hell out of this movie.
Yes.
If you're willing to give it a go, it will surprise you.
Yes, but as another note, I would definitely say this film is not for the faint-hearted.
Oh, no.
Like, that's one thing that we need to stress, yeah, is the fact that if you struggle with films that cover, like, dark
I'll give you a hint. My lovely wife, Katie, has actually already stated, for the record, she will not watch this film.
Okay.
Okay? She comes from a household that has some issues in the background,
yeah,
and so forth. She does not want to see this film.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, if right? this,
it's
if
simple
this
as that.
Sort of Absolutely. Material offends you, definitely stay away from this. Otherwise, definitely see it. I would definitely go that far. I would say.
I think if you are a lover
of film
and you're a lover of good performances, then definitely. Yes, but once again, if you're going to sit there with your hands over your eyes the whole time because you're having trouble with it, there's no real point in seeing this film.
Yeah, exactly. Confronting is hell, but worth it if you can handle it.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, let's move on. We have a second film that, because we are fast approaching the Oscars and we fell behind schedule, we have another film that we are going to talk about, which is, of course, The Blind Side. Now, we played you that little Golden Globe clip before about her winning the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a dramatic role.
Let's see why she's up for that.
This is a clip. This is the trailer for Blind Side, and then we'll come back. We actually saw this all together last night, and we've got some things to say about it. So here's The Blind Side.
I'm not cutting, I'm just asking. Let me tell you something, all right? We have been sitting around here for over an hour, and when I look around, all I see are people shooting the bull and drinking coffee.
How can I help you?
Oh, he was first.
No, you go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Me too.
You're right.
Excuse me?
You're right? How'd those words taste coming out of your mouth?
Like vinegar.
Who is that, SJ?
Big Mike. He goes to high school here.
What is he wearing? It's below freezing.
Do you have any place to stay tonight? Don't you dare lie to me.
Was this a bad idea?
What's the big deal? It's just for one night. It is just for one night, right, Leanne?
Tell me just one thing I should know about you.
Well, I'd like to be called Big Mike.
Leanne, is this another one of your charities?
I need to find out more about his past.
He's been enrolled in 7 different institutions. His grade point average begins with 0.
He needs to do better in school.
I'd love to work with him.
This is mine?
Yes, sir.
Never had one before.
What, a room to yourself?
A bed.
Michael's grades have improved enough that he can go out for spring football.
How's he doing?
I haven't quite gotten the hang of it yet.
It's all real nice what you're doing, but don't be surprised if one day you wake up and he gone.
I heard you got you a new mama now.
She's fine, too.
Michael was here.
Tell him to sleep with one eye open.
You threaten my son. You threaten me. Hell, baby,
someday Sandra Bullock.
We're in the middle of practice, Leanne.
You can thank me later.
This team is your family, Michael. You have to protect him. Tony here is your quarterback. You protect his blind side. When you look at him, you think of me.
Yes, ma'am.
SJ, you're going to want to get this. Baby,
The blind side.
I said
the
you can blind thank him later. Side. It's later, bro.
One man.
Okay, so that's The Blind Side, directed by John Lee Hancock and starring Sandra Bullock as Leanne Tui, Tim McGraw as Sean Tui, Quentin Aaron as Michael Orr, etc. Et I don't think there's anybody other names of any. Oh, and Kathy Bates, of course, is Miss Sue. She's probably the other. She's probably
she
the other.
The hell out of us.
The other big name in there. The film basically is the, as they say on the film, the incredible true story. Well, the true story of Michael Orr, the football player who basically came from nothing, was adopted by the Tui family and has gone on to be this massively successful football player. That's it in a nutshell, guys.
Pretty much, you basically gave the entire film's plot, as the title says,
The Blind Side, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Oh, actually, we could probably do that. Well, let's have a look here. We could actually say The Blind Side, based on the novel The Blind Side, the story of Michael, the amazing story of Michael, or by Michael Lewis.
Let's not do that. I'm happy to do that.
Let's not do that. All right, so we saw this last night, and I think the word of the moment, this word I came out and actually said, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way at all, when I just said the film is completely innocuous. You sit there and you walk out and you just go, there is nothing insulting about this film. It is a pretty film.
It is a wonderful Friday night family film.
Absolutely. Uplifting in all the right places, you know.
Lets you down in all the right places, you know.
If it hadn't been for the realization that Sandra Bullock can actually act, that the film would have just come and gone, yeah. I think it would have just come and gone. It would have been another...
But it is about football, so there's always...
It isn't enough about football. No, we've had a million football films come and go, though.
And we've had a million people go and watch them.
And we've had a million true stories and everything else.
They're awesome.
But they're not all nominated for Oscars, okay? Yeah, and this is the thing. And we look at this film and we go, okay, something about this film captured people's imaginations. What is it? And I think a lot of this comes down to, A, it is an amazing story, the story of Michael Orr and the fact that he was 16 and huge, like a giant, and he was adopted by essentially fast food chain owners. The husband owns, what is it, 82 Taco Bells or something like that. Yeah. And he went from... It's Pollyanna. He went from rags to riches, you know, and he was adopted, and he went on.
Well, they actually make jokes
in the film of Pygmalion and stuff like that.
Great Expectations.
And I think overall, I actually really enjoyed the film. I laughed along with it.
I think you'd have to be a very special kind of hateful person to really hate this film.
I think you'd have to have a really black heart to like it.
There's so much to love about the film.
I wouldn't say that. Innocuous seems to be the perfect word. I didn't hate it, but I mean, there's...
Octane in our chat room has basically said two words, white guilt. I think if the film had been handled badly, but I think the film is actually handled in such a way that, because, I mean, the bottom line is it's not just a film that's being made for white guilt. It is a true story. This is what happened.
I think that's what I thought until I found out that it was a true story.
Well, that's right. And the thing is, when you actually watch the film, that topic is addressed in the film.
I actually really want to retort that statement, because I think that it's it doesn't fall into that category. It's not because he was black that, you know, like, this all happened. It's because he was... It could be anyone that is big of shape and lived in the projects. Like, we don't have to bring it down to a race card. I mean, it could have very easily been a giant white guy. It was, so therefore they're being true to the story of the thing. But there is a little bit of it.
It seems to be a bit of this sort of... But he's black, huh?
But the fact is, it really was about the fact that there was a 16-year-old homeless kid,
exactly,
who was picked up by a woman who, for whatever virtues that might be, in the film, in the case of this film, it was because she was one of those good Christian ladies, you know.
Yeah.
Which I get.
I did like that they didn't harp on that too
much. And I did too. And I like the fact that, because I was very worried when we opened the film at the Christian school, and then they talk about the Christian values.
I was really ready to go.
Oh my God, this is like watching a recruitment film for you know the church,
which could have been awesome.
But I was happy that we did kind of sideline that.
I thought that the film strayed far enough away from that and was really about the story of the family, and we'll call them the family. Like the whole thing, including
unfortunately, in Australia, we can't sit there and talk about the family as the Tui family because it makes them sound like a beer mogul.
You know? Exactly. well, they're close enough. You know, fast food, beer, you know, like whatever. For me, I think the thing that I really took from it was, yes, I did think Sandra Bullock was amazing because I hate Sandra Bullock. I'm sorry. Yeah,
Let's make this very clear. When I said we were going to do The Blind Side, Josh almost had like a convulsion in front of me because he really doesn't like Sandra Bullock.
I just dislike the woman's acting style. And this was a very different character for her. But I fell in love.
And Josh, what? Just for the record here, did you like Sandra Bullock in this?
Oh, dude, she was fine. And
in fine.
but it, like, for me, I felt her character really charming. Like, you know, she's the kind of person that if I met her in a retail situation, I would madly hate her. You know what I mean? Because she was forceful. She would get her way.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, that opening scene with her in the DMV or whatever it was, talking to that lady. That is why you would actually hate this woman if you were in an outside situation. But just the way that she deals with situations and the family themselves were just this wonderful, like, caring kind of collection, believe it or not, you know, be them.
They
maybe
were a little bit Disney,
Exactly, yeah. But in a cute kind of a way, because I did like the fact that they had the Christian morals, but she says things like, you know, if you impregnate a woman, I will cut your penis off.
Sure.
Like I mean, it was
spoiler,
like,
alert.
Yes, because I'm sure that, you know, everybody's really worried about that. It's not the film I would usually go and see.
Spoilers for real life, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Spoiler, IRL.
Yeah, no, but look, I mean, they were charming, they were nice, the actors were picked well, the kid that played, the little kid was...
Yeah, the little kid was actually, and normally, you know, I hate little kids in movies, but he was actually quite cool.
He was actually
quite
cool.
What was the little kid's name? His, I'll try and find it while you're talking there.
And
not since Short Round have I found the kid to be awesome.
Jay Head.
Yeah. Awesome.
What?
Jay Head, who plays SJ, is, yeah, he's a find.
Exactly. He was very cute, and the father was very that very overstepped kind of, but very, you know, successful kind of a husband kind of a situation where he knew what she was like.
But I just found everyone to be too happy. It didn't seem real.
A feel good movie.
But you know,
the other thing about it though was
there was part of me that was kind of thinking the same thing through the film, going, "Boy, they are just so perfect." I was waiting for a crack in the facade.
Yeah, I was waiting for.
But then when you see the photos at the end of the film of the real people,
yeah,
you see there goes, "Oh my god, they look like that. They look like the Walt Disney Club."
Except for the fact that frightened me.
Yeah, except for the fact that Sandra Bullock was way hotter than the actual.
But even the real woman was a MILF. I mean, come on, even.
Oh, dude, she was a little. Yeah. Just not my kind.
But Sandra Bullock was.
You know, when she's walking away, everyone does the head thing, and there was the reason for that, you know. But
because you're a racist.
Whatever, dude. More importantly, though.
Hang on. She's white.
Exactly. Don't fuel it. No, but like I was saying, there is no person in this film that offends me. There is no edges really to this film, in my opinion. Even the scenes that were supposed to be hard-hitting weren't really that,
No, absolutely not. I think, sorry.
It didn't have highs and lows. That's what I found. Really. Yeah. It was just kind of like a steady hum.
Yeah, and in the trailer, it actually makes you feel like there is something in the middle where...
Dave both said, we were expecting, considering she's up for awards... We were expecting her...
The moment.
...to have that moment, yeah, where it's totally. Like that really powerful connection
scene.
The
precious moment.
That's
exactly.
Right. Or the Denzel Washington moment. There's always that one moment, and it's also the clip they play at the Oscars, you know?
Exactly.
It's that moment where you sit there and go, oh, you got the Oscar.
Yeah, exactly.
For that,
it's the scene that, like, I mean, that's one of the reasons I really love watching the best actor or whatever scene, is when you get that scene where even that one-minute clip, you are spellbound.
And then
even
you have to watch the movie.
That. Exactly.
Yeah.
You've just seen the best moment of the film.
And you have to look at this film and sit there and say, there is no one moment.
Do you know the only thing? I just want to bring this up. It's going to be very hard for them to play that clip at the Oscars due to its content.
Which clip are you talking? That's true.
Yeah, very curious. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I don't know. They may not show that clip, and that would be a shame, because that is the moment. But I would actually say that Sandra Bullock doesn't have a singular moment. I think what has happened...
That's a bit harsh.
I think, no, in this film, she doesn't have that one singular moment where you go, that's the Oscar moment, you know?
Yeah.
I just think this film took everybody off guard. I think when you are an actress who has consistently for 5 years or so put out stuff the caliber of The Proposal and All About Steve and The Lake House, that people sit there and go, who are you? You know? And I think this film really is one of those genuinely good performances where you just sit there and go, it's a good, solid performance. She embodies and captures the woman who she's supposed to be, you know?
Exactly. Look, and I mean, she did a great job for that. I mean, I will say one thing about her as a person that I really felt interesting was the fact that you really did feel her love. And as Digital's put in the chat room, you really felt her passion, you know, towards the situation where you loved the fact. It was smirk-worthy every time she would get angry and hate it and just go and deal with it.
Quite frankly, I think the moment that they may show at the Oscars, the moment that I loved most, I think, in the film, was where she went out onto the football field.
Oh, absolutely.
And is dragging the players around. I just love the fact
that one of them, she grabs, pulls him along, talks about him, and then just, like, head slaps him out of the way. It's like, now, piss off.
Or she walks past the coach and goes, you'll thank me later.
And for that, she deserves credit.
She deserves credit
for being Sandra Bullock playing that good an actor, but... Yeah, not
also. Digital Angel in our chat room has also pointed out the husband, the little smirks on his face and stuff whenever she gets into gear. And he loves her so much.
Yeah, exactly.
And he knows exactly what she's going to do.
I love the line in the car the first time they meet Big Mike where she's like, where he goes, oh no, I've seen that look before. Your mom's about to get away. And it's just like, you know that he's dealt with this for their entire marriage.
Absolutely.
And like, yeah, so I think in closing, my only thing to say is that I felt this movie was... completely without edge. It was a nice film, but it definitely had no
amazingly standout. For those who can't handle
stand-up.
Precious,
yeah.
This is the film for you.
Basically, that's it.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
Yeah. And okay, so Pablo, have you got anything to add?
Basically, as much as I loved Precious, I generally don't like films about feelings and getting feelings out and hugging. I tend to prefer explosions and cars transforming.
We all love that?
Yeah, we do. And I found that with The Blind Side, funnily enough, that the bits that were about football, the football movie parts, I got into when she's, running onto the field and telling him what to do. And, when it kind of became the water boy, I was, really excited. Oh, cool, this is he's going to tackle the guy, it's going to be horrible, but then when it came back to the family feel-good movie, I just tuned out again.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like it was almost, it was halfway to either being a sports movie or a family movie. But it didn't, I found it unsatisfying that it wasn't either. It wasn't both.
And what I find interesting is the fact that I actually preferred the other half of the movie. The football stuff for me was secondary.
But see, this is the thing. If they'd taken that football stuff out or reduced it, then I would have agreed with you.
Mm. I don't know. I actually kind of liked it because for me, I'm sick of the stereotypical sports style movie where you finish with the big game or whatever and so on and so forth.
No, but this isn't about the ending. It's just about what the movie...
Well, it was important to have the scenes about the football because, it was about football and it was about him being good at football and getting somewhere. But I was glad that they were smaller scenes because... I didn't really want it to end the same way every other one did.
Because I don't think, this is where I disagree though, because I don't think the film is about football. I think the film
But that's what I'm saying.
The film is about reconnecting with life, basically, and this boy who was basically drifting and doing nothing was given a chance to do something. He was given a chance to be a person, and have that life and everything else. The football was just a vehicle to get him there.
I still feel that the football, and I know it's based on a true story, so you can't really... do that, but I still feel that football should have either taken a back seat or a front seat and shotgun and all the other seats in the
car. Fair enough. And then that's a fair enough opinion. I actually think they struck a fairly good balance on it.
Okay.
Because the football stuff wasn't overpowering. It wasn't too long.
Yeah.
And I think that it was there to get its point across that he was finally good at something. Just to throw out in the chat room here, we've got Octane is basically saying, what if you can't handle Sandra Bullock? He's already commented. Josh can't handle Sandra Bullock, and yet...
I liked her. I very much liked her in this film.
So I think that answers
that
question.
If you can't handle her after Smoots because you're a racist.
I don't even know where to go with that.
I don't think you're supposed to. I think you're just supposed to blink and look at him.
For those of you at home,
tall
Josh
and the short of it? No, the long and the short of it? What's the saying? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Final words.
I've done my final words.
Final words, you've done it. Yeah, Pablo, go see it or not?
Go see it if you just want an innocuous Friday night movie.
Do you think it's a DVD rental, maybe?
if it's on TV. If it's on Foxtel,
wow,
and it's playing, it's all like, right, I'll check this out, but don't try not to pay money for it. It's not horrible, but I wouldn't put it at the top or even possibly even the middle of my list.
Wow. Okay, so this raises the last question on this film, and then we're going to get ourselves out of here, which is, it's been nominated for Best Film and yeah, Best Actress.
Yeah.
Are we in the running or are we way off on this one?
No.
Oh,
sorry.
No, it could win. It's just...
It could, because it's the Oscars, but...
anything is possible.
If we were actually going to go on ability in film and its actual, you know, like, actress-ship, as it would be, no, she doesn't. She shouldn't.
No?
Sorry. No, she's just... It's good, but she's not that good. There's no powerhouse scenes. There's no real amazing thing. She's harnessed the character well, but... Yeah,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, in 1 second, I'll go out on a limb and say what I think. Pablo, what do you reckon?
I think, basically, it got nominated for Best Film, didn't it?
Best Film and Best Actress.
I think it could absolutely win both of those categories. I just don't think...
Do you think it deserves to win in those categories?
Who am I to say what it deserves?
All right, my feelings on this, I'll leave... Pablo is lost for words on that one. I will finish this off by saying that I don't think in any way, shape, or form this film should win Best Film.
Yeah.
I think that there is a possibility because, of course, you know, the right-wing right wanting the happy, joyous family films, it could, but I don't think it will. And I don't think it deserves to.
Yeah.
However, as far as Sandra Bullock is concerned... Mm-hmm. I think she has stiff competition out on that field, and I actually think that Meryl Streep deserves it much more than she does for Julia and Julia. But there is a good chance. I think she has the same chance of winning Best Actress that Up in the Air has of winning Best Film. Mm. She is the dark horse here.
Yeah.
And I think she is popular enough with the public and with the industry to think, wow, she's done something different, let's encourage her.
Well, I think it's another one of those Oscars, like, you know, that's overdue. You know, people like her enough to say, she hasn't gotten one yet, she really should.
Yeah, but I don't think she's ever given a performance where I would sit there and go, that's worthy. No, whereas this is the closest she's ever come.
It's the, if you've been around long enough, they're like, hey, you haven't got an Oscar yet, here you go. That's why I expect to get one. Just hang around long enough.
All right, so
that is with no disrespect to Miss Bullock.
All right, so my opinions are differing between these two films because with Precious, I definitely say Monique has to win for Best Supporting Actress. But in the case of Blindside, I don't think either her or the film are necessarily really in the same league as what is going on around them. So, but I think she is the dark horse. I think as actress is concerned, I think she's the dark horse.
Hmm. Okay.
All right. Let's get ourselves out of here. We've got a little bit of housekeeping. First of all, I will say next week we are going to be doing the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. Next week we are going to do Alice in Wonderland in 3D. We will have Mirren in studio with us, so that's going to be a lot of fun as well. And as I said, we do have a special guest coming.
Don't expect an incredibly unbiased review from her.
And that's going to be very interesting. So because she loves, let me state one more time, loves Johnny Depp. So... she just absolutely loves Johnny Depp. All right.
Yeah, I got it.
Thanks. You agree or disagree with anything that we talked about today, you can send your feedback at feedback@geekactually.com. We would love to hear your opinions. In particular, we'd love to hear your opinions on the Oscars in general, because we are going to be doing an Oscar special on Monday. Mirren and I will be watching the Oscars live and then doing a post-mortem recording straight afterwards. Not live, though. It will be just an audio recording, so look for that on iTunes. Any feedback you have, get it to us before Monday, and we will actually read out your thoughts. Okay, you can also send us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. That is a Sydney number. And please remember to state which show it's for at the beginning and keep it short. You can also fan us on facebook.com/geekactually. Now, we also have to put out a very special plug. PalGN is actually have put together a campaign with the retail chain Game. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about this, Josh?
For anyone that's been following the situation in Australia on its current standard, we are in a state of calamity over the fact that we do not have an R18 rating. Obviously, anyone that you know doesn't live under a rock will know we're currently going through an R18 discussion, which is actually just recently finished. But for anyone that knows the way our my government works, this is going to do nothing, and this war is not over. But our voice is currently out there, and we are being heard. We have got to the point where we've got discussions, and it's important now to push towards that. Now, game is all over the place, and it is literally a matter of just walking in and filling out a form. It'll take you less than a minute. Next time you're in a mall or near one of these stores, go in and sign one of these. The difference between this and the EB Games one that are currently out is they are not trying to fight the point of view of Grow Up, which is the EB Games Star 1, which is basically pointing out that we deserve an R18 rating because, you know, we're over 18. That's an interesting point, but I think the PAL GN system is so much more... so much more realistic and so much more for everyone, not just the gamers, where it's saying, as it's called, everyone plays.
Yeah.
And it's the idea that the kids need to have the separation between these ratings. We need to have R18 so that we can separate out games like the GTAs and so on and so forth that may not be appropriate for 15-year-olds and so on and so forth, and may have content which isn't worth giving to these kids, and... basically saying that these things can be available unless we have a good rating system.
Yeah,
and we are trying to push for the idea that this is to protect the children, not to give us what we want. Mm-hmm. And I very much like that, and I think everyone that can possibly get close to these places, just please go in and fill this out. All these discussion papers, all of this thing, is what we've been trying to fight for so long, and we need to keep the fuel on the fire.
Now, we cover this in platforms and in the Geek Actually Tech as well. When PAL GN, when Josh started talking to PAL GN about putting some promotion for this towards platforms, we then basically... also got in touch with Jeremy over at PAL GN and said, look, Geek Actually will support you 100%, and we'll put it across all our shows because we are, as we've said many times, about anti-censorship and so forth, and we do think that there should be a fair and balanced rating system on games, just like there is on films. And to think that only children play games is the most ludicrous concept out there, and I do really think their campaign has got some merit. So if you can't get into a game store, though, you can go where, Josh? There is a website.
Website is is it everyone?
Everyoneplays.org.au. Yeah, everyoneplays.org.au. And we actually, for those who are watching live, we also have a graphic here. We'll throw up on screen just so that people can. Oh, we better get rid of that little thing there, don't we? There we go. There's the address there on screen. We do really, really, even if you are not a gamer, but think that there should be a fair and balanced rating system on games, this is something you need to get involved in. One of the arguments that Michael Atkinson has been using is that it's only gamers who are requesting this. Mm. It needs to be everyone. Yeah. So if you are living in Australia, think that there should be a fair and balanced rating system on games, bringing in an R rating to help bring it in line with films, support this. Okay? Exactly. It's not just about gamers. It's about freedom.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that is our serious moment for the day. Now, we're going to plug a couple of podcasts around that we are big fans of. First of all, I'm going to plug Real Junkies at WeekendRonan.com. They're the tequila-fueled movie reviews by a bunch of guys in the States who I really, really enjoy. And also, we're going to push the movie Fan House, but I'm not going to have to say anything this time because Big Bad Brad and Charlie have actually sent us an audio promo. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up their slide here. There we go. And have a listen. This is their promo.
Here at Movie Fanhouse, we have all sorts of movie character guests, like Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
My name is Freeze. Remember it well, for it is the chilling sound of your doom. Is that good?
And Andy Serkis as Gollum.
I like children. I like that real Adam. It looks a bit precious!
Sean Connery as Sean Connery.
That is sure Sean Connery to you, Frenchie.
And the notorious serial killer, Michael Myers.
So check out Movie Fan House,
the podcast for fans
by fans.
Side effects of listening to this podcast include nausea, irritability, hostility, homicidal impulses, rapid loss of mental clarity, amnesia, kidney failure, diarrhea, muscle aching, tingling, inability to walk, problems sleeping, constipation, impaired muscle formation, erectile dysfunction, and temperature regulation problems. Thank you for listening.
Holy shit. That was so impressive.
Thank you,
Brad,
guys.
We are not worthy, man.
Brad and
well
Charlie.
Done.
And I think Charlie is their mixer, basically. He's the one that puts it all together. And I thought, good work, both of you.
I thought the Sean Connery was the best.
That's actually their co-host. That's Jesse.
Yeah.
Who's doing all those voices. He's very talented. He's very funny. And if you can, go check out Movie Fan House, and you can have a look at their wonderful new site at moviefanhouse.com. Mm. All right. That's everything, I think. I think we have covered everything except for our own plugging.
Thank you.
We haven't got to our own plugging yet. This is how we're going to finish off here. And we're basically going to say we have two other podcasts that you can listen to. If you haven't had enough of us yet, you can go over on Monday evenings and you can have a listen to the Platforms podcast, which is our gaming podcast, hosted by Dave Kaczynski and Josh. Although you're flying solo this week, Josh.
No, I'm flying solo, but we will have at least the two guests in the chat room. We're still finalizing exactly who that'll be, but the topic this week is Heavy Rain, and it will be a very interesting one because the best of my knowledge, we will be having Job from Gamerino. He's a very intelligent reviewer who has given it one of the lowest scores I have seen, which is one of the reasons we're pulling him on, giving it a 4.5 out of 10.
Wow.
And this is a complete contradiction to everything else currently on the market. I have finished the game, and I have some very interesting points to raise about the game, and my review will be a lot different to what people are expecting it. So definitely come in and check that out on Monday night.
Fantastic. All right, we also have on Wednesday nights, we have Geek Actually Tech, which is our tech show. Now, just to let you know, we're actually going to be making
we're going to be making those things are really invasive. They just kind of
making a few adjustments.
Can I get in there in one of those?
Yeah, I'm sure we can do that. We're going to be making a few adjustments. One of the things we did at the beginning of the year. One of the things we did at the beginning of the year, which I'm actually now kind of regretting a little bit, was we actually took tech out of this show. And now, I don't want to bring back tech in a great big way because we actually have our own tech show, but Josh and I were talking about it. And the Geek Actually show really is kind of a This Week in Geek show. Mm. And we always had kind of fun with, you know, the Great Tech War and so forth. And so we are going to bring back
the Tech War?
Not that one, no. Right. We're actually going to be bringing back a very small tech component, kind of the fun stuff, into this show, and we'll be feeding that onto the Geek Actually Tech show on Wednesday night. So for those who want a little bit more in-depth in their tech, come along to Wednesday night, and we'll be putting together, you know, we put together a fairly good tech show. This week we actually did a whole thing on 3D, which was very interesting. But yeah, as of next week, we will be tossing in as of the week after next, we'll be tossing in just a little bit of tech back into the Geek Actually show. The reason why not next week is because Mirren and tech is like an allergic reaction. So we really can't.
It usually causes an allergic reaction.
Yeah, that's right. So we really can't kind of put those two together.
That's
but
nice.
We will, as I'm 2 weeks away, we will be putting tech in. Also, this week on the site. This week on the site, this is something that I really, really need your help from all listeners. We are going to be putting a survey up on the geekactually.com site. I'm actually putting together the survey right now with a survey company. It will be anonymous. It will be private, so your answers aren't going to go all over the web. It's just it's an internal survey because we are approaching our 75th episode of Geek Actually. I would like to retool, get this show going so that by the time we hit our 100th show, we are the podcast that everybody wants, basically. Mm. And so we're going to do a survey where we're actually going to talk about what are your favorite parts of the show, what are your least favorite parts, favorite hosts, least favorite hosts, et cetera, et cetera. We're really going to delve into it, and we really would like honest opinions. As I say, nobody's going to be bagged on it or anything. It is truly an informational survey. We just need some feedback from our listeners as to what you like, what you don't like. And if it's private, then hopefully you'll be honest about it because you won't feel like you're going to be attacked about it. This is not going to be published anywhere.
I'm going to say this quietly. I think the show needs more nudity from Josh. Just putting it out there.
I really don't. No. I'm not putting the camera on that. I'm not putting the camera on that.
You should get that looked at.
Anyway, so we are going to have that survey up sometime this week. I will put a message in the Facebook fan page as well once it's up. Please come over to Geek Actually. We're only going to have the survey up for about 2 weeks, so it is going to be a time-limited thing. We just really need to get as many entries into it as possible to help us get the better show. But we are going to get out of here right now because we've been talking for almost 2 hours again.
And it's really hot in here.
And that's actually one of the points in the survey is how long should the show be? So we will be coming to that as well. In the meantime, guys, I want you to go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all more next week.
Dave, just for you, Sequest out. We'll be right back.